Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and these are Dan Baer's interviews with the director and writer for La Chimera, Alicia Rohrabacher, and the film stars Josh O'Connor and Isabella Rossellini.
Signore, sta sognando?
Era un mezzo mago. Così ce lo siamo portato con noi. Tutta quella bellezza, i vasi, l'oro. Tutto lasciato lì per un mondo che non si sapeva neanche se c'era. Il mondo delle anime.
Cerco la signora Flora.
Te l'avevo detto che sarebbe tornata.
Guarda, guarda chi c'è.
L'altro mio unico amico. Taglia, grazie. Mangia.
She wants to hear what we say.
Welcome everyone to the Next Best Picture podcast, where we are talking with Alicia Rohrabacher and Josh O'Connor, the director and star of the new film La Chimera. Alicia and Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I wanted to start by asking Alicia, you know, I just spoke with the fabulous Isabella Rossellini about this film, and she mentioned that before shooting, you had said to her that the film isn't so much about death as it is about the beyond. And I'm wondering if you could describe further what you meant by that, because I get that sense from the movie, but I want to hear your take on what the beyond is.
Posso rispondere in italiano?
Is it okay if I answer in Italian? And then, hi, there will be an interpreter, Lilia Finobulan, and the interpreter can interpret everything into English.
Oh, yes, please, go right ahead.
Prego.
E anche quelle cose che verranno.
So this movie talks about our relationship with things that are no longer with us. And then also things that will happen in the future. So in this sense, it's a movie about our relationship, our collective relationship with the beyond, because it's about a group of tombaroli, of grave robbers, who steal ancient archaeological items from Etruscan graves. And at a certain point in the 80s, they start stealing everything and anything that they find that was hidden and buried in tombs from 2,500 years ago. And naturally, as they do that, they have to think about what those items meant for the souls that they'd been left there for. But it's also a movie that tells us about the story of Arthur, who is a man who is looking for the woman he loved. And his idea of the world is an idea in which what's in the beyond, as in the past, and what's here in the present world are a continuum. There are no barriers. There are no frontiers. They all coexist. There's no margins. So Arthur is somebody that lives in the beyond, as in the past, but also in the real world. So the movie is about the relationships between these two worlds and the relationship that we as a community, as the collective world of human beings, have with these things that are no longer here.
Thank you. That's a very beautiful explanation of that. I really love that. Josh, I wanted to ask you, you know, I read or heard you say in an interview that you had wanted to work with Alice before, specifically knowing about this project. And I was wondering what about her work made you want to work with her?
I think it's like there's a story behind how I first came across her work, but I think it's generally known. But I, to be honest, when I first watched Happy as Lazaro, was the first film I saw of hers. And to me, it was like, and I really mean this, it was like I discovered a filmmaker who was making films for me. But obviously I've realized that she makes films for everyone. But and I think what I've thought long and hard about why that is. And I think really it comes from, you know, we all grow up with fairy tales and we all grow up with mythology. And, you know, often people, reviewers will just, you know, describe Alice as like the queen of magical realism. But I actually think that Alice's films are extremely human and like extremely real to me. And I think that's why I specifically love Alice's films, because whilst they do have this like air of mythology and fairy tale, they are also grounded in very real human conflict or fears or heartbreak. You know, they have that running through them so strongly. And actually the trick is, from my side and for Isabella as well, and for everyone else involved in the films, is to actually resist that temptation to make it something otherworldly. You know, it's like Alice and I had a conversation very early on where I was like, yeah, I think he's sort of like an angel, isn't he? He's like an angel. She was like, no, he's a human man. he's a man. But he's got this kind of ghost, you know, he can be a man and be a ghost. And he can have this conflict of existing in this very real world, but having a pull to something that we can't see. And then also that brings on the question, which Alice would be better place to answer, but about what is, you know, why we consider the world we exist in as more real than the, you know, the life beyond or whatever, you know, whatever that might be. You know, the whole thing about the Etruscans is that they, you know, they spent more time building graves than they did houses. You know, it was like they worshipped the soul more than they did the vessel it lived in. And so I think that to me is what really grabs me about Alice's work and continues to.
You know, on the page, I mean, like, I will say I have not read the script, but from what we see and hear in the film, Arthur, we don't actually get a lot of his backstory. We know very little about where he comes from and what he's been doing that has led him to this point. There is an outline. We get snapshots of it. But I'm wondering, you know, having a character that is so much of a blank slate, does that inspire you or frighten you as an actor?
I guess both. But I think that, I mean, that's sort of generally true of any character. You know, it's like what you have on the page is what exists in the film. And it's always, you know, it's my job to try and flesh that out. But I also think, you know, the important thing is that it's not shared. You know, it's like I approach any character with these scrapbooks of information and most of it fictional and stuff that I've invented. But it's not for the film. It's kind of a selfish act, because the mystery of Arthur and the fact that he's an outsider and people don't know too much about him is, I think, very important to the film. You know, I think that's very important. But I don't know. I mean, Alice might have a very different idea of who Arthur is before. I don't know.
But that's actually what question that I was going to ask, is how much conversation did the two of you have before shooting about Arthur and how he fits into this world? Alice, you can...
I would love to say, I don't know, I respect the characters, but this is a joke. no, abbiamo C'è una scena, secondo me, che è molto importante.
There's a scene that I find very important in the movie. At a certain point, there's a storyteller, a troubadour, that comes and tells the characters about their own story. And I wanted for the actors, for the characters, that is the Tombaroli, the grave robbers, to be able to see themselves from the outside and to be able to have this internal gaze and external gaze at the same time. So we needed to shoot the scene and we all needed to be present and to be in front of the troubadour that was telling the story. But at that point, I realized that Arthur is not able to see himself from the outside. He is too locked up within his grief, within his inability to communicate, within his surly attitude. And he was also, though, at the same time, truly, authentically in pain. And therefore, in this scene, when the troubadour arrives, twice Arthur goes away because Arthur's character is not capable of seeing himself from the outside. He cannot have the right kind of gaze on himself. He's obsessed by what is lacking. And he's somebody who has a great emptiness inside, and that's the very reason why he's able to perceive the emptiness below him. There's a beautiful poem by Cristina Campo that starts as follows: two worlds, and I come from the other one. And this, for me, is the poem that is constantly resonating within Arthur's head.
I like that a lot. That line of the poem is a beautiful capturing of that character. I know we're coming up on the end of our time together, but I had to ask, because judging by something that Josh said earlier about, you know, like it's magical realism, but it also feels more grounded in humanity in terms of these characters. And thinking about the style that you shot the film in, it's shot very clearly on three different kinds of film stock, 35 millimeter Super 16 and regular 16 millimeter. And then you have the speed ramping and a bunch of other sort of visual schema in this film. I'm wondering what inspired you to have all these different visual textures in the film.
Volevo che il film fosse una festa, ecco, che visto che affronta dei temi così pesanti.
I wanted for this movie to be a feast because it deals with issues that are so heavy, the beyond, death, loss. So I wanted for it to be a great celebration, a celebration of freedom. So with Alain Louvard, the cinematographer, we decided to keep all the different formats that have made the material history of cinema, because it's a movie about archaeology. So we thought it would be very fitting to accompany at a visual level with an archaeological support this storytelling. And at the same time, we wanted to be free to range from animation to comedy and also very intense and dramatic scenes, because we wanted first and foremost for it to be a celebration, a feast.
And it absolutely is a feast for the eyes and ears and also the brain. Thank you, Billy. Alice, Josh, thank you so much for joining us again today. And thank you for your wonderful, thoughtful answers.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Incantesimo.
It's of inestimable value. That's what we're here for. To estimate the inestimable.
Rubare le cose delle anime! Vi maledico!
Non ti perdere d'animo. Tu trovi sempre tutto, eh?
Need to talk.
Ma che hai fatto a questo?
Ma si sente male.
Adesso ti facciamo vedere delle cose che nemmeno gli archeologi se le sognano.
Welcome everyone to the Next Best Picture podcast, where we are talking with Isabella Rossellini, one of the stars of the new film La Chimera from Alice Rohrwacher. Isabella, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's rare that I get to talk to someone with such a storied history in the world of cinema. You have so many years and so many projects to draw from. And I'm wondering, how do you choose what projects you work on in general? And what was it about La Chimera specifically that made you decide to do it?
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, most of all, I think is who's director of the film. And so even for La Chimera, I wanted very much to work with Alicia Rodwacker, where I think she's one of the great talents of our generation. And most of the time, I mean, the script is just an indication. So I might read the script, but I also want to know who is directing and who are the other actors. And once I have these 3 information, but the script is the least important, because sometimes you read a script, you don't understand it, but it's David Lynch, so you want to work with him, you know, because narration, he doesn't want to do narration. He wants to talk about something beyond narration. And so it's useless to read the script because you don't understand anything with David's script or Guy Madden's script. And yet they are great talent. So it's really mostly talents who, you know, that I want to work with.
And when you did read the screenplay for La Chimera, what was the thing that most stood out to you about it? Because it seems like, at least from the final film, it's a very dense work. There's a lot of things going on in it.
Yes. Yes. When I read the script, I could see there's many people, many stories, many lead story and all that. And I wanted to see if the film had a core. And I asked Alicia, is this film about death? And she said, no, it's not about death. It's about the beyond. There is a difference. Mm. It's about the beyond. Yes, it is about. So the film is almost at 2 levels. There is the Tomb Raider and the big markets that are buying these archaeological pieces. And it's, so it reads like a cop and robber kind of film. But then there is another layer. Then is the poetic layer, and it is the presence of past life. So our present life, it's not only the present and our wish to where we want to go, the future. There is also a force that influences us, that is what happened before us, the past lives. And this is might be very strong in Italy where we have a long history, and every moment in your day, you're reminded there were the Romans, there were the Etruscans, there was Renaissance, there was this person, there were that person. And they do have a psychological presence. And I think Alicia captures that presence in a very poetic way, so that the film is about the beyond, too.
Absolutely. And you talked about the history of Italy and how that is so present in the film and in your everyday when you live there. I know that the film was partially inspired by Alice's own memories and experience with grave robbers and hearing of all these tales and artifacts. I know you grew up in a different part of Italy than she did, but do you also have any memories of such things from when you were?
I think the Tomb Raiders are, you know, is the bartender and the butcher of every village. They round up their salaries, but there is so much history. Italy has been lived by centuries that every time you do a hole, you find something, you know, and, so yes, it is common. I mean, she lives in a part of Italy where particularly the Etruscan lived. That was a civilization that preceded the Romans. And you still have great mystery about them because we have not deciphered that writing. So we only see this incredible tomb, all the frescoes. They seem to be maybe a matriarchy. The women seem to be very celebrated. Maybe they had a matriarchy instead of a patriarchy. We don't know. It's this maybe. But we haven't deciphered yet what they've written. But they're very present. Yeah, they're very, especially in the area where she lives. But, you know, Italy is as long as California. It's not that big. So I live in Rome. She lives there. It's maybe 60, 70 miles. But at the time, when you only had a donkey to move, that was a distance.
Indeed. You know, the other thing that was so striking about this film is, you know, the different ideas of motherhood between Flora, your character, and Italia, played by Carol Duarte. And I'm wondering how each of these women maybe spoke to you about Italian women in general of their respective generations. Did you recognize women that you knew in them?
Particularly. I mean, not particularly. I don't think they are particularly Italian women. I think there is just women. One has two children. One plays by Carol Duarte brilliantly. She reminded me of Giulietta Masina in the Fellini's film. I thought she did a fantastic job. Is a woman who has two children and no husbands. Maybe the children are from two different fathers, but there's no fathers. And actually, she lives in the house of Signora Flora that I play. And it's a very dilapidated house. As you could see, this was a person that maybe she didn't have money, but the family had money, or she comes from money. And then everything dwindled away. So she still lives in that kind of palazzo, but it's all, you know, water, brains in it. It's completely dilapidated. And their opportunistic relationship, you know, she pretends to give, the character I play pretends to give singing lessons, but in fact, she has a young girl helping her start the fire, serve her, and she pretends that she's a student because in fact, she has a shelter for her two children that she hides in the house. So it's not particularly Italian. I think it's human. I mean, it's human. I think a lot of women have to struggle if they have children and no money and no husband, no fathers that help. That's, I think, a common through everybody in the world.
And you create really wonderful, very specific feeling relationships between yourself, between Signora Flora and everyone else in the film, even though on the page, it doesn't feel like there's actually a lot about the characters or their relationships. It's very specific notes about very specific things, but we don't get a full picture. I'm wondering how you were able to build that rapport with your fellow actors with regards to these characters without...
Alicia, when I saw Alicia's film previous to this one, I thought that it was also she works with a non-actor. So I assumed there was a big amount of improvisation, but I was completely wrong. Everything is scripted and she rehearses almost like a choir. When I have the scene with my five daughters and we all talk and talk on top of one another, we rehearse for days and almost like a choir. Oh, I'm sorry about this. Is my dog barking. I'm sorry. Hey, Yoji, sorry. There's my dog, it's not my dog, it's my son's dog. And she barks all the time. And my son just had a baby. So she sent me the dog here.
Oh.
Sorry, I just wanted.
It's perfectly fine.
Anyway, so everything is very rehearsed, which I was amazed. And she does reconstruct, because the film feels very casual. It happens along among people. They all talk to one another. And I was surprised to see how she got to that casual mood. But that is one of the things that she does that is very special. And also the film, yes, there is a character, some characters that's, you know, like, of course, Josh O'Connor and Carol Duarte. But all the other, they almost function like a choir. You know, there's the Tombaroli, the Tomb Raiders, the daughters, but it's like choirs, but there's many people and all this confusion. And little by little, the film evolves and develops into an atmosphere and a story.
It's wonderful. and that sounds, the way you describe it, rehearsing everything in like a choir, it sounds very Altman-esque. With the overlapping.
Yes, like Altman. Yes, it is. I haven't thought about it. Very much like Altman, yeah. And I don't know how Altman worked. I don't know if he rehearsed and everything was scripted. But, you know, when I think of Nashville, was his film that he did.
Yes. So many one of my favorites.
And at the end, there was a story. But if you say, what was the story? You say, well, it's a story of a place, of people. And yes, very much. I even thought about it. But Alicia's film is very much like Altman. Italian version, all
yes, very much so. I know we're coming up at the end of our time together, but you know, like I said, you have such a rich history with cinema and coming from the lineage that you do. I'm just wondering what you think, like looking at the current landscape of cinema today and the increasing digitization of film and how we watch things, what do you think that the artists that you grew up around would think of this current landscape?
Well, I think it would be okay. I think I think an artist will express their art or the story they want to tell, whether it's on writing or in music or in paintings. And in film nowadays, the distribution doesn't really, it influences a little bit because it might reach further. You know, I'm thinking of women and mothers of small children. It was hard for them to go to the movie theater because the children cry, they have to bear a babysitter. It isn't, you know. So, and now all of a sudden, because you can stream, there is a lot of women's director, a lot of films dealing with stories that we have never heard before, because I think they are reaching an audience that before couldn't really get to the movie theater, or they would go twice a year, but that's not enough to keep an industry. So I think it's going to be better and more variety. And also, and you're not locked into telling a story that is an hour and a half or 2 hours long, no more, no less. When you're streaming, you know, like when you write a book, you want to write a book of 50 pages or 700 pages. Now with the streaming, you can do a series where you have, you know, shorter episodes, or you can make a very long story by using the episode as chapters of the story. So I think it's getting better.
It's really fantastic and wonderful to hear. One more question that I have to ask. I would kick myself for not asking it, because I love looking at an actor's career and the characters they've played, and they really live inside actors, I think, for a long time. So I have to wonder if Signora Flora had access to Liesl's potion from Death Becomes Her, do you think she would take it?
I don't know. She's a grumpy one, the Signora Flora. She, probably they would have a huge fight, you know? They are at the opposite end. Signora Flora didn't do anything for her beauty. She's like, you know, a grumpy old lady, already with a foot well into her tomb, and happily so, and because her daughter is there, and she wants to be with her daughter. And Death Becomes Her character is nothing... Nothing about nature.
No.
Everything can be under my control. I can control it and I can master it. I don't think you can have a big fight.
Well, thank you so much again, Isabella, for speaking with us. It's been a delight, and the film is lovely. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Dan Baer's interviews with the writer-director for La Chimera, Alicia Rohrabacher, and the film stars Josh O'Connor and Isabella Rossellini here on the Next Best Picture podcast. La Chimera will be released in theaters by Neon on March 29th. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.